welcome to the Messy Antics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
Shalom, and welcome to another episode of Messy Antics. We're going to have what we hope is a fun but also insightful episode today. We're going to talk about mistakes that we made in ministry, not to just mock ourselves or laugh at ourselves, although I'm sure there'll be some of that that happens, but because the reality is that everyone makes mistakes, and learning from our mistakes and then teaching others not to make the mistakes that we make is a very important part of discipleship. It's an important part of mentoring. Matter of fact, last night we were doing our study on Tuesday night, and we're doing a study on lessons we learned from the patriarchs. And one of those lessons was the mistakes that Abraham made, and how, you know, he took Lot when he was supposed to leave his family home. Then he lied about Sarah being his wife versus sister and things. And so here's Abraham, the father of the faithful, who the Bible explicitly provides evidence of his mistakes, so that we can learn how to trust God, we can learn how to avoid those mistakes. So we're going to share some of those mistakes that we've made, and by mistakes, not necessarily sins, but choices that we made. Could have been better choices.
Gaffes and such.
Right, gaffes, different things like that. So I'm going to throw it to Rabbi David, who brought up his just a minute ago, so that he can kick us off on his, and then we'll go around the room and share some of ours and talk about it.
Well, I would say that it's a mistake. It's definitely not the. I'm sure I've made quite a few over the years, but this one in particular is one that just stands out to me and is both kind of humorous to me looking back at it, but also a kind of learning opportunity to some degree. And we were with Shuva Israel in Long Island for several years, I think about 5 years, while I was going to college up there. And I was a rabbinic intern with David Rosenberg, Rabbi David Rosenberg there. And he had me speak 1 week, and I was preaching on, in essence, discipleship practices and things that we should do on a regular basis in our life and our walk with the Lord. And one of the things that I touched on pretty intensely or pretty heavily was fasting. And I after the service, was standing back in the back and kind of greeting people. And one of the members of the congregation comes up and goes, "Hey," I got a question for you. I said, "Yeah." He goes, how often do you fast? I mean, you said it was important. How often do you fast?" And I went, well, in my head, I'm like, you can look at me and see it ain't all that often. But nonetheless, it was like, I don't fast as much as I would like to, or as much as I know I should. And he goes, he didn't word it quite this way, but in essence, he was like, "How dare you preach on a message and tell us that we need to fast, and then you're not practicing what you're preaching?" And this was a guy that like took fasting serious, and on a regular basis, I think about once a week or so, would fast a day or two at a time and be intentional in prayer and intense in prayer while he was fasting. He was like, you know, if you're gonna preach a message like that, you need to make sure that you're actually doing what you're talking about. Here's a book you need to read. And it was just kind of one of those schooling moments. You know, I paid a lot of money for a college degree to have somebody at our congregation, you know, kind of slap me across the face verbally for a minute about a mishap in a sermon that I should have processed first. And it wasn't that it was a wrong statement for me to make. It was just that it wasn't something I was at that point kind of living out like I should.
Yeah, I think probably all of us have been preaching a message and said something like that, and then in the back of our mind while we were saying those words, started checking ourselves, like the Ruach was checking us to say, okay, you said it, now are you doing it? And that's a real thing. My mistake, or one of them, I wrote a book on these, but one of them was that I realized after a number of years of ministry, as being a rabbi and with my two kids, my wife, and congregation and everything, that I realized, because I was bivocational at the time. So I worked at a grocery store as a manager, and then I ran the congregation. And I realized that I had determined that I could not yell at my employees or my customers. I couldn't get mad at them. You lose employees and customers if you get mad at them. And I couldn't get mad at my congregation members and yell and scream at them when I got angry. So I realized that I was carrying that anger from anything that happened at work or anything that was going on at synagogue home. And then when my children or my wife would do something minor, all of that frustration and anger would pile out at them. And I realized through the move of God, through his Ruach speaking to my heart, that I was really unfairly being angry at my family or getting very not violent, but just taking every little thing out that happened outside, because my wife wasn't going to quit shopping at the house or quit coming to synagogue, and my children were stuck with us until they were 18. So somewhere in my mind, I had justified that I could just pour out all my anger at my wife and my kids. And so that was a real mistake, not only a ministry mistake, but a husband mistake and a father mistake that I had to deal with. And again, didn't immediately get over doing that, but it became a focus to change how I was doing things. So one of my ministry mistakes was, so now when somebody in the congregation does something, I just yell at them and or deal with it directly rather than trying to, it's because sometimes you choose not to be confrontational in order to save somebody in the pew. You don't want to lose anybody, especially if you're a smaller congregation. So you don't do the aggressive pastoring that you should do, because you're, if I do that, they'll leave. If I do that, this will happen. So I had to learn that if somebody in the congregation did something that deserved discipline or discipling, which is another word for discipline, you actually handled it, even if that meant they left your congregation, because it was the right way to handle it. And you don't take that out on your family, because if your kids didn't do something wrong, disciplining them isn't going to help them, but it's also not going to fix the problem with the person.
Yeah, you're also delaying the inevitable, because if you walk on eggshells to keep a person there, it's like, I guess my response, and I've heard that before, literally the exact word you said, which was, I can't say blank to blank, they'll leave. And my response is, then they shouldn't be here. And that sounds really harsh, but I think that's true.
Yeah, it's a reality. Now, I will tell you a funny story, and then I'll go to the others, because that was kind of a heavy kind of mistake. We decided one time that we were going to have for our Rosh Chodesh. Now, Rosh Chodesh, for those that are listening that may not know, is the monthly celebration of the new moon or the beginning of the month. So we do something fun at our congregation. Now we do family game night and serve pizza. But years ago, we used to rotate different activities, and we decided to have karaoke. So we rented had a guy who had a karaoke machine, and he came in and set up. And we're having a great time, and people are having fun doing karaoke. And I did not think to screen the songs that were being played. And one of our young people, who was new to the congregation and was a baby believer, got up and started singing a song that was absolutely inappropriate for not only for synagogue, but even what's it, the not for workplace, and it was like, I'm trying to undo this and get it fixed and unplug the thing and turn off the sound and, all that. So that was my... It was a bad thing. It was a mistake, but it was one of those things that you look at and laugh afterwards and say, I can't believe you were that naive to not even deal with that.
Yeah. This is Rabbi Toby. this story, this is tough. I hope this qualifies, because I didn't necessarily make this gaffe per se, but I was certainly the victim of it. And I think it does connect with what Rabbi Eric said about, I think because we're believers and we're called to love and put up with each other to a reasonable degree with the amount of grace right? It's not just saying just be a doormat, right? But you know, everybody deserves grace. We're all humans, right?
Right.
Well, I don't know if I've ever talked about it. I think I've talked about it a few times, but back in 2015, Brooke and I, my wife Brooke, and I, and let's see, there was I should have been prepared. I'm making a gaffe right now. It was Brooke and myself and a small group of other Messianic worship leaders got together, and we formed a Messianic worship ministry called Meochad. And
I remember that.
Yeah, we wanted to essentially be a hub for Messianic worship and new music and chord sheets and support and all these things. And I think we did a really good thing for a specific period of time. And Brooke and I were with Meochad for 5 years, and which was most of the time it was, it existed. And over that course of 5 years, there were three conferences in 2016, 2017, and 2018. Obviously, the first conference was really scary because we didn't know who was going to come. We didn't know if we were going to do a good job, you know, all these things. And we had the conference at Beth Hillel, the Messianic Congregation in Atlanta, because our ministry director at the time, that was his congregation. It still is his congregation. But so we just figured Beth Hillel is a large place. It's got a lot of infrastructure.
Right.
It'd be a great place to launch, you know. And because it was done at Beth Hillel, we used a lot of their staff and ministry teams to help support, and they did a fantastic job. But there was some problems with particularly the stage. Again, we're a worship ministry, and everybody who was involved in the leadership team. I don't want to try. If I count, there'll be this big pause. But there was seven of us. And we were all involved in worship. And we would rotate participating on the worship team. And Brooke and I were leading the first worship set opening night. It was Friday evening. And we were leading the first one. The problem is that there was not anyone really limiting the amount of traffic on stage. And I think a lot of it had to do with people just not wanting to say to other people, hey, you cannot be on stage. So there was just, because if you don't, people are just going to walk up there. And people were walking up there to talk to me and Brooke, and people were walking up there to talk to our ministry leader, Mark, and mostly Mark because he was the ministry director. But people were just, it was just way too much traffic. And here's the problem. We have headphones hooked into our monitors so we can hear. And anytime somebody would walk through, they would unplug the headphones and walk through. And we had just done our rehearsal. I left everything plugged in. I simply hung my headphones on the monitor, and I got off stage, and I just waited. We had Shabbat dinner. Then we got up. We did our first worship set. I got on. I wouldn't think that somebody would have unplugged my headphones from the monitor, that some genius decided to do that. and you know, unplugged, probably walked through, and then didn't turn around and leave things the way they found it, you know. So I put these headphones on, and it was the kind of headphones like I'm wearing now, like the earmuff headphones.
Right.
You know, like noise canceling. And I put them on, and one, two, three, four. And then we start. The first song we played, I remember, was Ted Pierce. It was Awake by Ted Pierce. Well, we played a whole worship, but we had played a whole praise and worship set.
Awake.
That first song, definitely. I realized I had nothing. I was not getting anything. Like, I went one, two, and I could barely hear Matt behind me, Matt Adams, our drummer. I could barely hear, like, barely hear him playing drums. So I'm leading worship in a vacuum, and I kind of turn my eyes, and I can see my headphone just dangling.
Oh,
and I'm like,
no.
Man, if I knew who it was, I would have just...
You would have made another mistake.
So I'm playing and singing in a vacuum, and I'm looking around me, and I see, like, the people on the worship team in Brooklyn, and they're just like, oh, this is great, we're just... And I don't know where I'm at, and somehow we managed to make it through, but I just was like, and when I got done, the first thing we did when I got backstage, and I don't have a good poker face, I'm not really good at stuff, so as soon as we got backstage and the door shut, man, I like turned into the Hulk, And Brooke was like, Toby, you gotta, okay, Toby. And I was like, you guys have got to do something about these people on stage. And somebody unplugged my headphones. I just went off. And a couple things to learn. I mean, sure, there was probably a way for me not to get so upset because I had to kind of like go sequester myself and calm down, which was one of many times I had to do that over that weekend. But the main thing, too, is just that I think we struggle ministry-wise telling people you can't be here. You know, Dave and I have had a conversation recently about just people being in certain places where they're not supposed to be at the synagogue. And I'm like,
right.
When you go to stores, when you go to school, and even at my own house with my children, there's places, everybody knows that there's just simply places you can't be.
Right.
And we have to be able to tell people that. Otherwise, you're going to have things like your worship leader leading worship with no headphones.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think anybody who has been in congregational leadership has dealt with that issue of people walking up, coming, doing.
Yeah, they just walk. Walking up on stage is a big one for me.
And the people that while you're talking to somebody just walk up to you and interrupt in the middle of, you know, you're talking to a new visitor and all of a sudden someone comes up and asks some strange question that has nothing to do. But I wrestle with that myself because you don't want to hurt people's feelings.
No.
And let's be honest, we're rabbis. They're always strange questions.
Always strange questions. But I went and visited Rabbi Eric Carlson's congregation in Virginia years ago. Mm-hmm. And he had the best system in place for that of any place I've ever been. He had people that were his ushers or whatever you want to call them, had responsibility to govern and shepherd people to areas. So if somebody walked toward the platform, somebody was going to walk in front of them, greet them, ask them, shake their hand. Mm-hmm. But they did it in a way that wasn't confrontational, but it was clear, right. I'm not here. And when I went to speak there, he actually assigned a person from his congregation to walk with me wherever I went to intercept anybody that might come up that was at a place that shouldn't have been there but played off my cues. Like if it was somebody I knew, then they just, they would play off my cue. But if it was somebody who wasn't, then they would kind of intercept and communicate with them in a kind way. They weren't aggressive. They weren't. But it was clear that he had a means in place to deal with those things. And I had never been to a place that was that organized in making sure that things were done orderly.
Yeah.
And
military guy too.
Right.
Probably helps.
Yeah, very strong military guy. But so I learned and we've applied some of those things to our congregation as we grew and as we were able to achieve that. Because it is something where people will just walk up on the platform or they'll just walk into your office or they'll just, those kind of things that are off-putting. You know, if you're praying and, trying to get your mind and heart on the Lord and somebody comes in and says, so are you going to watch the game tonight?
Right.
Or so did you hear about this or did you hear what the president said or whatever? It takes you away from where you're wanting to be. So and especially for worship leaders who have such a responsibility to lead the congregation to a place where they can receive God's word, to their hearts are there. To not have that kind of peace to enter in before they start is huge. So that's one thing I think we've all dealt with, but it was one that Rabbi Carlson's congregation taught me. Just one visit was like, okay, this is something we need to impact into our congregation.
Jonathan, you got one to share?
Yeah, I mean, I've got probably several I could share. I mean, nothing crazy, but I think one of the bigger ones that I've made this mistake several times and have come a long way in improving not making it, but it's when I'm with someone either at synagogue or out in public and they're like, hey man, would you pray for me about this? And rather than just taking the time to pray about it then and there, I'll be like, sure man. And they're like, yeah, like not like to dismiss it, just like, like we showed up, like it can be in a grocery store, we're both there to get things. We've got wives expecting us to follow a list, a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So, but like, yeah. but
sure.
But the reality is, I, you know, when those events happen, I should just pray with them then and there.
Right.
And remember to pray for them elsewhere. Now, I've gotten better about absolutely remembering to do it elsewhere, and have done it more often, and have improved my choosing to, like, stop there and go, no, I'm not going to run off and go finish what I was here doing already.
Right.
But we're going to pray here, even if it's a 15-second prayer. You know,
sure.
So that's a big one that I've been been improving steadily. But it's been a mistake for years. I would do that, you know. Oh yeah, man, sure. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, because then what happens if you don't write it down? Odds are you forget, you know, or you don't remember till the next time you see them, and then you're like, oh darn, I forgot to pray for them.
Yep. And instantly your brain's like, well, how do I know I wasn't the one prayer needed?
Right.
Even though you know better.
Yeah. I remember explicitly, I had appendicitis and I was at work. This is back when I worked in the grocery store. And I knew I had something serious. I thought it was appendicitis.
Right.
And one of my pastor friends came into the store and I told him, I said, look, I think I have appendicitis. When I'm done working, I'm going next door to the hospital to get checked out. And I said, would you pray for me? And what I wanted was, let's have service right now.
Right.
Right.
And he did exactly what you did. He said, okay, brother, I'll pray for you, and walked on.
Right, brother.
And so, you know, in my mind, you know, I go up to the hospital, and I do have appendicitis, and I need to get surgery, and all that goes on. And the back of my mind has always been, if he had prayed for me, would I have? Now, I understand that's...
Right. It's not a nefarious thing. It's just people are – it's a bad habit, but it's a habit nonetheless that people are – where life is ongoing and we don't stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, so rather than instead of stop – and kind of like we learned last night with Abraham, you know, one of the lessons we learned with Abraham is when to stop. And, you know, we need to learn to stop, to pray, to stop and to worship, to stop and to praise, you know, with – you know, and the – So yeah, that's one of my ones.
Yeah. Yeah, and I bet each of us could share a time, not only with the prayer, but where we were in a situation where when we walked away from it, we thought that was my opportunity to share something. They opened a door and I was in too big a rush or wasn't paying attention, and then beat ourselves up because we didn't say something to a person about Messiah.
Right.
So technology can be our best friend.
And our worst enemy.
But it can also be our worst enemy quickly. And so we were with the synagogue in South Georgia, Beit Shalom in Thomasville, Georgia. I was the associate rabbi there. And one of the I went to text one of the college-age guys in the congregation. And that because he spent a lot of time at our house after services and stuff. And so I went to text him. For the life of me to this day, I can't remember what I was texting him about. But I was asking him a question about something. And I want to say I was still using, I think it was like a really, really early Android. Like the iPhone 2 was out. It was like an early Android that I'm using, and I'm texting them. And I don't remember what I was trying to say. All I remember is I misspelled something. I had only typed in one word. I misspelled something. I went to backspace to correct it and accidentally bumped the enter button, sending the message. And my phone and its great infinite wisdom auto-corrected whatever I misspelled and sent the autocorrect word. And I didn't notice it at first. And then as soon as it registered, I was like, oh, crap. How do I fix this? How do I fix this? How do I fix this? And so it sent this guy one single word. And all it said was, and if your kids are in the room, cover their ears. All it said was ejaculation. That was it. That was the one word that was sent. And he sends me a text back. This guy's like early 20s. Sends me a text back and I know him, and I can picture him trying to figure out what is going on. Like, I can picture his face. I can picture how he'd be responding. But his one reply back was, in what context, ? And I sent a text back. I was like, dude, first off, in what context is your rabbi texting you that even remotely acceptable, that in what context should be the first question? Like, the first question should have been, what the heck, dude?
We had invited an Israeli leader to speak at our congregation, and his plane was delayed in Atlanta. And it was clear from his text message that I received that he was voice texting as he walked through the airport. And his phone auto-corrected several words to very inappropriate words. And he evidently hit send just like you did. And then I got 7 or 8 immediate text messages apologizing and explaining what happened to that. So honestly, I guess we all have probably sent something that was auto-corrected to somebody.
Yes, or accidentally sent a text message to someone else that was meant for someone else.
Right, or hit reply all.
I've done that.
Or hit reply all when we meant to reply to one person and it sent to everybody.
That's awful. You got to be careful.
Somebody did that on the rabbi's forum.
Yes. Yeah,
they were trying to reply to one individual and they hit reply all. It went out to everybody and they were like, oops.
Yeah. Yeah, I it's funny because like there are times now I've never actually texted anything like super bad or inappropriate or anything, but like I have been texting between, for example, I do, you know, side jobs and I'll be texting the managers or owners of those businesses. And then, of course, usually that's later in the day or something. I'm about to go do a job. And my wife has also texted me something about like, hey, can you stop and pick up X, Y, and Z on the way home or whatever. And so I'll be texting back and forth between those people. And then one time I sent a message about something I was supposed to get or needed to get with a question. And I get the text that dings up on my phone screen. What are you talking about? And I like opened it up and I realized I had texted the text I sent to my wife to my boss. And I was like, I'm so thankful I wasn't saying something like, you were the most beautiful thing ever, and I love you.
or even more awkward.
Or even more awkward. Yeah, so it's like, but, you know, because it could have been a lot worse. Thing. Yeah, it could have gone real.
Well, I don't know anybody.
I've called the cops. I just want you to know.
Like, yeah, you are now on a list.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that hasn't I loved you the wrong person.
Oh, I almost do it all the time. Yeah. All the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that.
I so rarely say it to anyone beyond my wife and kids that it I don't accidentally text that to people.
Oh no, phone calls is where you get it, where it gets you.
I have these two stories there because it's about the same thing. But this was, I'm an assistant rabbi now, so I'm getting more and more used to giving messages. And before that, I did. I was a youth leader for some years, so. You know, God was,
bless you.
Yeah, God was easing me into
God
giving
blessed him out of youth ministry. No,
God was easing me into. I'm not afraid of public speaking like teaching. I got used to. I taught for 15 years, so I got used to delivering like a lesson on history.
Yeah,
that did help. And you know, teenagers are a tough crowd, but God was good with. You know, equipping me for that. But I remember the first time I had to actually give a message to like adult congregants, like the, you know, congregation. It was when I lived in Macon and, they had a Sukkot celebration, which went on for a week at this campground. And I was asked to deliver a message one evening and I did not want to do it. It's on a campground, so it's not like it's at the synagogue. So they don't have all the things you need to help prepare. I had a full time job, you know, teaching it's a lot, and I was nervous and scared and all those things, and I didn't prepare well either, though. And I didn't prepare not because I was lazy. It was more because it was just like paralysis, you know, like I don't know what to do. So I got there and you know, there's a lot of activities going on, so it's not like everybody's there because, you know, Toby's speaking this evening. It's not like that. Everybody's already there doing stuff. But anyway, I gave a message and I didn't have any notes prepared or anything. I just had like my Bible bookmarked to different places. And I just figured, you know, I'm going to give a few scriptures and then I'm going to just talk about them and kind of
extrapolate.
Yeah. Through the whole thing. Right. Yeah. But at some point I got lost. I was looking for some scripture in Exodus. I think I remember it was Exodus, just because, you know, when something traumatic happens.
Which is a super ironic book to get lost around.
So it's and it was just really, because it was so traumatic, I think I remember being like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be in Exodus somewhere, making some reference. And I lost my place. I lost like my bookmark or whatever. And because I lost my place, I stopped talking. And 30 seconds is not a long time. But when you're standing in front of like 50 people,
uh-huh,
and they're quiet and they're looking at you and you're supposed to be talking. And it was the longest 30 seconds of my life. And eventually I recovered and finished it. But my God, I still remember that. I still remember how it felt. I still remember like staring at my Bible and flipping through and trying to find something and not being able to find my way out of it for, again, about 30 seconds. You know, it was right. That was one with speaking. The other one was, again, this wasn't one of my gaffes. This was actually another person's gaffe. But again, I was the victim of it. Also in Macon, there was a big youth retreat. It was a congregational youth retreat. This guy at our congregation had a big plot of land, and we had a pretty big youth group, about 20, 25 kids.
Right.
So he said, hey, man, we're going to have the youth come over for a weekend, and we'll plan stuff. And I wasn't actually the youth leader at the time. I had not become the youth leader yet. I became the youth leader in Macon, but it had not happened yet. I just was actually a member of the worship team. You know. But the youth leader at the time came up to me and said, hey, Toby, I'd love for you to speak on Saturday morning. And I said, oh, okay, you know, I'll do it. Again, I'm not used to this stuff. But so I actually really prepare and give a message.
Right.
Like I totally prep, get ready, you know. And it actually went really well in the morning. And then a few hours later, I just stick around and hang around with the youth, you know, and because, you know, and my friends and the youth leaders were my friends and stuff. So I just kind of hang around and stuff. And then the youth leader comes up to me and goes, hey, man, you want to give a message tonight? And because at that point, now I would say no.
Right.
No, dude. No, you can't spring that on me. No. But you know, almost, you know, 16, 17 years ago, I was like, yeah.
You didn't know how to, say no yet.
And I don't even remember what I talked about. I got to be honest with you. I don't remember. I think I was probably saying a bunch of just, oh, God loves you, you know, and, you know, Yeshua loves you. And, you know, man, God loves you. And, you know, he called you because he loves you. And so, you know, remember that. When things are bad, that God loves you. And I think I got 25 minutes out of some kind of crap like that. But I remember I remember seeing the guy, the youth leader that asked me to speak, and I wanted to friggin' kick that dude in the face. And I was like, why would you do that? What it was I don't think he was prepared. I don't think he wanted to do it.
So he asked you.
He's like, hey, you want to do it again? And I was like, yeah. Honestly, I should kick myself for you. I should have just said no. I was like, no, dude, I'm not ready for that. Anyway.
It's funny, back to your story about the waiting for 30 seconds. We've had those moments where, like, we'll roll the scroll. Now, there have been times where I've just forgotten to roll the scroll before Shabbat. But there have been times where it's there. I've just lost it. Like wherever it begins, you know, it's one of those, like, there's not a lot of indentations in the text, and you're like, oh,
you get
gosh,
to that,
where am
the,
I?
In the random parsha that starts like in the middle of a line,
right.
In the middle of a column.
And so we'll be up there, and you're right. Like, it may be on the video only like a timestamp of 30 seconds, but it feels like an hour up there. Like,
and even for people in the congregation, it's usually not as bad. It's because you are in the vortex of it.
Right. Yeah. And I remember there was one time, and I actually called you, it was when you were out of town. I think you were, I don't know where you were actually. You were speaking somewhere else. And I was like, you know, I opened the scroll and realized I hadn't rolled. So I rolled real quick and I like was able to find it between the time the children were as the children, like, we finished blessing the children, and as the children are leaving, I knew I had to roll it. So I quickly was like unrolling it and like rolling it too. I was like, yeah, I usually don't take those gambles, but I did today and it paid off. So
so I have a sitcom funny story that I want to share, and that's years ago when I was rabbi in Mobile still. We have a very playful practical joking kind of relationship with a lot of people, especially in our ministries. And I get a phone call from Governor Siegelman. Now, it was an actual phone call from Governor Siegelman and somebody, but I have no, like, there's no reason in the world I would think that the governor was actually calling me.
Right.
So somebody called, said, "Hey, Governor Siegelman's on the phone for you." And so I figured it was somebody playing a practical joke on me and got on the phone like, yeah, real funny, ha, ha, ha. But it's actually the governor of Alabama on the phone to invite me to come to Montgomery for a clergy prayer meeting with him and his staff. Like, he was inviting me to come up. And my first impression, like, his first impression of me was me getting on the phone and going, yeah, real funny, ha, 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 you know, and almost hung up before he said something. And then I realized that's actually Don Siegelman's voice on my phone.
Oh, gosh.
So it fixed itself, and I did go to Montgomery and was part of his clergy prayer team for the time while he was governor. But
Wow. But
that was one of those, you know, bite you kind of responses to normal activity that was abnormal that day.
Yeah. When was Siegel in office?
Before today.
Yeah, long time.
Well, yeah. I remember when I moved to the States, it was the guy before Ivy.
Oh.
The guy who left office because of his behavior.
Okay, I just thought of one.
Okay.
This is totally a gaffe of mine. Yeah, okay. So when Brooke and I led worship in Savannah at Karen Orr, this was back in like 2017, 2018, Brooke was not feeling well. No, it wasn't Brooke. It was one of the babies. Because, you know, in Savannah, Yossi and Kess were, God, babies, man. And one of them was sick. So, and it was like, it was high holidays. It was like a Sukkot evening service or something. We weren't outside. We were in synagogue. It was an evening service. I do remember that. And I remember we had to sing this one song. And because Brooke had to stay home, Rabbi Jude Carosello, who was the rabbi at the time at Karen Orr, who was also a really good musician, he was like, well, look, I'll just play with you. I'll play piano with you and stuff. Because he can play like any instrument. So he's next to me playing piano. And I printed out the music. And there was one particular song that I printed out in the wrong key. I printed out in Brooke's key, not in mine. And my voice is, I have not only am I a different register from Brooke, but I'm way lower than Brooke.
Right.
You know, and I do not have her range or any of her, a lot of singing abilities she has, I just did not get blessed with. So, but I'm really low. So I'm playing this song and I realize it like in real time. I'm like, oh no, crap, man. And I start to play it, and I know how this is going to sound. I just know how this is going to go. I know how this is going to go. And it was called Unfailing Love by Joel Chernoff. It was a Joel Chernoff song. Your unfailing love is true. Except I was like, oh, no. It was worse than that. I couldn't even falsetto. I was like, love is true. Oh, gosh. And then that was how it was on the chorus. But then on the verse, I was like, I was either way too low or I was so high. I was singing like out of the top of my head. It sounded awful. Yeah.
There are certain liturgical portions.
And yeah. And, you know, you hope that the congregation is going to be gracious. I felt like such an idiot. Is it just printed out the wrong music? So And you know, in those moments when you're embarrassed, you get really angry.
Yeah.
Like, unreasonably angry. Like, I'm mad at Brooke, who's at home not dealing with this. Like,
how
I'm
dare
like,
your voice be higher than mine?
Like, I'm mad at Brooke. It's not even her fault. And then I come off stage, man. And one of my closest friends at the synagogue is a guy named Steve. Wonderful guy. But he came up to me and goes, hey, man, Toby, what happened? And I said, dude, I printed out Brooke's music and not mine. I said, I have a completely different. He goes, oh, I know.
We all know.
Because when you started singing, I said, oh, no, here we go. And I was like, thank you, Steve. And I was like, oh, gosh, I wanted to go home after that song. I just wanted to leave, and I was so mad. I was like, and it's like, God help me.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
He let it happen. There are certain liturgical pieces that if I do not start off at a low enough key, it will be, it's a similar thing. Like, it's like, oh great, this is gonna be a real fun song.
So yeah. One of my favorite, and it wasn't even really a mistake until after the fact when I realized the optics, but one of my favorite things was our congregations, and you guys probably deal with the same kind of stuff. Our congregation, like, we're on the Gulf Coast of Alabama, and I always joke with people, it's like, we're a beach area, we don't do formal. Like, you know, most of our congregation shows up in jeans or khakis and some sort of polo shirt on the high end. And then, you know, there's that one random guy that wears a full three-piece suit. But other than that, like, most people, Toby. No, most people.
Oh.
No, I'm joking. There's always somebody else. There's always one other person. Yeah. But no, most everybody shows up. And so, especially during college football season, everybody's wearing Alabama shirts or Auburn shirts or whatever. They're wearing their favorite college football team.
Well, you also live in Alabama.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so it's,
and so they're, like, decked head to toe in that. So I like football. I like college football. I like, you know, I'm a Florida State Seminoles fan. I like pro football. I'm a New York Giants fan. But for me, I'm a baseball guy. First and foremost, I am a diehard New York Yankees fan. And so generally speaking, football season doesn't start for me until mid-October. This year, very much not the case. I started watching football really early this year. But but generally, football season doesn't start for me till the Yankees are done playing. And but which they were done playing early this year. I mean, like, 3 months into the season, but this particular year, it was the opening day of baseball season of Major League Baseball, and it was opening day for Yankee Stadium. And for a lot of times, when opening weekend rolls around, the Shabbat on opening weekend of Major League Baseball, I'll wear a Yankees jersey to send a guy, just mix it up a little bit, something entertaining, whatever. So this particular year, I show up, and I'm wearing my Yankees jersey, and it may have even been the first time I did it. I don't remember. But I show up, I'm wearing a Yankees jersey, and I'm up on stage, and I'm like, you know, you guys probably noticed that I'm dressed a little different than normal. You know, you don't normally see me wearing sports attire at synagogue, but, you know, I've spent the last, you know, however many months dealing with all of you people, and I kind of pointed at the congregation. And it was, like, legitimately my four fingers on both hands pointing at the congregation. So I've been dealing with all of you people and your Alabama and Auburn gear all football season. This is opening day of baseball, and I'm wearing my Yankees gear. So you're just going to deal with it. Joking around. It was obvious I was joking. And everybody laughed, and it was a good time and whatever. And then later that day, for whatever reason, I opted to go back and look at the live stream feed of that service, and on the live stream, it straight up looked like I flipped the entire congregation off with both hands.
You people.
While I'm saying that, and I'm like, oh.
This is not how this is meant to look.
You can't undo that one now.
No, and you don't want to say anything because you don't want to bring attention to it. You don't want to call attention to it, right?
But that was one of the funniest. Like I said, in the moment, it wasn't a mistake. After the fact, I see how it looks.
Yeah. I used to go to church with a guy who, huge Alabama fan. I mean, you could tell which car was his in the parking lot.
Huge, like, enjoyed the buffet, or
big time fan. No, actually, the guy was in relatively good shape. But you knew which car was his in the parking lot. It was that obvious. But he would, if Alabama won, he wore, like, crimson red pants or a shirt that Sunday. They lost, he wore all black, like, in mourning. Like, yeah. He was perfectly serious, like, he wasn't joking. Like, yeah. he was like, oh, they lost, you know. I was like,
this is Alabama.
This is back when I lived in Enterprise.
I know a guy that wouldn't go to church if Alabama lost, and I'm like, what are you paying God back? You're not hurting his feelings.
We have a guy in the congregation, he's a professor at one of the universities in the area, but he was a medic for years. And his wife is a dispatcher for one of the police departments in the area. She calls the weekends that Alabama loses, she calls it Domestic Violence Weekend. because for the, you know, they're all getting tanked watching the game, and then they apparently beat the crap out of their wives because they lost or something. I don't know, but she said it's like it's like clockwork. If Alabama loses, there are going to be an obscene amount of domestic violence calls.
Good grief.
Yeah, I didn't realize football could be so serious until I moved to Alabama. I mean, in the grocery store when I worked as a manager, people would actually get in fist fights on Iron Bowl, you know, the football game between Alabama and Auburn week.
Right.
Everybody come in their outfits, their costumes, and get in fist fights. Not yet.
No, it's always in November.
Yeah.
It's coming.
You know, I grew up in Germany. And in Europe, soccer fans are pretty passionate. Like, and I've run into British soccer fans and Irish soccer fans and French soccer fans.
None of those are soccer fans.
Of course, yeah, no, they are.
They're football fans.
Well, but you know what I'm saying. There we call it football, but for the sake of our audience, it's soccer. But
yeah, but they would stab you for calling it soccer.
Well, they might, but I'm living safely in Florida right now, so I'm feeling rather well untouched. But like, I thought, man, these people are pretty passionate about their sports. And then I moved, and I mean, within the first week of being in Alabama, when we moved to the States, we walked into a restaurant or something, and someone said one of the sport like slogans, you know, like Roll Tide or War Eagle, whichever one of the ones. And then someone like from the back part of the restaurant shouted it out in response. I'm like, wow, this is these people. And that became a normal thing. Like you go to any barbecue place, any grocery store, and someone says that, you're bound to hear it shouted out in response from some rando back in the corner. And so I was like, man, this is an interesting place.
I'm just really glad that I haven't had like, you know, somebody's preaching and you know, somebody in the crowd will scream amen or hallelujah or something. I'm just really glad nobody in our congregation just randomly went, Roll Tide! and drop some really awesome one-liner about God and Roll Tide! I was like, what the?
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we could come up with probably dozens and dozens of more of these mistakes and things that we've done and times we've dropped the ball when we were doing leadership things or things we didn't prepare for or things we said when we didn't intend to.
When we forgot to tell our faces to shut up.
Right. when we didn't stop when we should have. You know, like the old joke, is he finished? Well, he quit preaching 20 minutes ago, but he's still talking.
Right.
And those kind of things. And we may do another episode of this in the future. I hope you enjoyed this one. If you have, please share it with other people on social media. And if you had a funny ministry experience, drop it in the comments and share it with us.
And I will say we should add the link to your book, Oi.
Yeah, I did write a book, Oi, How Did I Get Here? 31 Things I Wish Someone Had Taught Me Before I Entered the Ministry, and we'll throw that link in the comment section for those that want to avoid mistakes that I didn't.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.